And we're still live, having a bit of line trouble and some technical issues, but, you know, it's all good. So we're here, and hour two, News for the Soul. If you miss any of this, by the way, newsforthesoul.com, where it's all free all the time, that's where you go. And right now, we're going to be talking with Swami Kriyananda. Globally revered, Swami Kriyananda spent 3.5 years as a close disciple of Paramhansa Yogananda. We'll get him to tell me the exact pronunciation so I don't keep beating that one up. He spent 3 years in the spiritual leader's weaning years together with them, dedicating his life in service to Yogananda teachings. So today, we're going to find out all about that and more. I'm just going to basically nestle up to the phone and be like an on-air satsang. Here we go. All right, we're just having a little bit of technical issues with our switchboard. Hopefully we're almost live here. Swami Kriyananda, are you there? Maybe not. Maybe it's one of those enlightenment tests. How do we know we're really there?
Right, exactly.
Oh, there you go. Now you're here. I had a couple of different choices for you there. Welcome to News for the Soul.
You did say the name wrong. It was Paramahansa Yogananda. But you got
close.
My name all right.
I got your name right. That's good.
I didn't say right. I said okay.
Welcome to the show. And how are you today?
Thank you. I am very well today, and I'm looking forward to being with you. And I've read about your biography, and I have to say I'm extremely impressed.
Oh.
One doesn't often find people willing under such difficulties to keep forging forward. I feel a great sympathy with that because I've had to do that in my life too.
Yes. Well, in that moment, though, what other choice do you have but foraging?
Yeah.
So tell me, how did you connect? I'll let you say the name with this teacher.
How did I connect? Wait a minute. You know, I was seeking truth as a young man. We're talking of 62 years ago now. Now I'm a youngster of 84, so a little different. And I was very intensely seeking truth, and I sought it in every way possible without God, because the church I belonged to presented a picture of God to me that I found thoroughly unpalatable. So I thought, well, let's look for some other way. I wanted very much to find a way to help people. But I sought it through science. I sought it through political systems. I sought it through the arts. But every channel that I sought through seemed to end in a dead end. And I realized that without the concept of God, nothing really ties together. And I remember going out into the night near Charleston, South Carolina, and asking myself, if there's a God, what must he be? Well, obviously he can't be an old man with a long white beard. Obviously he can't be a policeman up there waiting to throw people into jail. He has to be something. And I thought, well, what's caused me to ask this question? And I realized that it's because I'm conscious. And I realized then that he must be consciousness. And that the closer I am to that consciousness, the more I aware I am of what life is all about. And so I decided that I would devote my life to seeking him. And when I say him, I don't mean him. I mean whatever that consciousness is. And first of all, I began to think I was going crazy because, you know, people don't seek God. I'd never heard of anybody doing that. I knew nothing about the lives of saints and so on. But I realized that there was nothing else that I could seek. And at any rate, to make a long story short, at last I came upon Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. And I was living in New York at the time. And God had helped me in this, because I knew nothing about the Oriental philosophy. But when I found out about it, I just, that was it for me. If my parents had been there it would have been very difficult to leave. But my father was sent to Egypt. The day I put my mother on the ship to go join him was the day I found Autobiography of a Yogi. And when I finished that book, I was completely sold. I took the next bus across the country, and the first words I said to him were, "I want to be your disciple." I had never thought of being anybody's disciple, but he convinced me that he could help me in ways that I desperately needed help in. So that was 22 years ago in 1948, and I've been a very sincere follower of his ever since.
It's interesting. I'd never read that book or studied any of his teachings, but I've seen his picture many times and always very much was drawn by his energy.
Yes.
I have an extensive audio collection of his that I listen to all the time. What was the gist, the main gist of his teachings and his story that drew you to him?
Well, I tell you, it was mostly that he talked about this same aspect of consciousness, which I had been seeking. And secondly, what drew me was his absolutely perfect reaction to every situation. There is always bliss in it somehow. He explained that God is bliss. God is love. And I had been willing to renounce everything just to find a little peace of mind. But I realized that finding God meant something so cosmic, it just overwhelmed me. So I guess it was that search for bliss. To me, he was more than a person. He was a principle. This bliss is what we're all looking for. I never try to convert people to his path. I always say I'm trying to convert you to your own true self. Everybody in the universe, or in the world, we can put it for now, since we don't want to get into UFOs, is seeking happiness. And that search for happiness is due to the fact that we are all manifestations of that infinite bliss. We all have that latent desire in us. And we may seek it in wrong ways, and I should say most of us do. But all of us are motivated by that one thought, to find happiness, and of course its companion thought, to avoid pain.
Well, and there's a lot of pain and fear in the world. I mean, how
I have
one
to say it was that pain that drove me to God. I think suffering, there's a place for suffering in life. We need it to show us. You know, when a stove doesn't mean to burn you, but if you put your hand on it, it hurts you. And so you know I shouldn't touch a hot stove. And so there are certain things in life that are not good for us. And if we go against that law, then we suffer. So the reason for suffering in this world is to say, no, not that one, not that direction, go this way.
So it's not necessarily a negative thing in that context.
Not at all. Its ultimate purpose is beneficial, but it pains while it happens because you don't know why you're suffering. It seems so reasonless. And yet, in the end, you finally do discover, oh, I made a mistake. And when you reform, then you stop that kind of suffering. And I have to say this, that in my life, the painful experiences, though they were far from enjoyable at the time, they were my greatest blessing. I learned more from them, and it turned me in the right direction, which I should say God wanted me to go. So suffering has an entirely positive motive, a purpose behind it. God doesn't want us to suffer, but he doesn't want us to make those mistakes which take us farther away from our own inner bliss.
Does that go unilaterally? I mean, to people that are really challenged geographically, you know, children without food, I mean, unilaterally, purposefully, on every level?
You know, some of these things take time to understand. I mean, people die of starvation. But you have to understand that life is temporary. You know, without reincarnation, it's hard to believe in justice. But the teaching of reincarnation is that you come back to this world, that when you die, your body disintegrates, but you've got your consciousness as a vortex of feeling and awareness that you can't dissipate that quickly. And with that, you come again and again as long as, for instance, yes, you keep your consciousness. But then, when you die, if you die with, let us say, with a desire for cigarettes, it's in this world you've got to come to satisfy that desire for cigarettes. If you like Cadillacs, you don't find them in heaven or anywhere up there. You have to come back here where they are. And so people are drawn back to this world as long as there is anything in this world that attracts them. And when they've given up all those desires, they have another world they have to go to, but it too is only temporary. This universe and the path to God is an incredibly immense and long and absolutely wonderful journey. You know, any saint who has ever found God, not one has ever said, what a scam. They've all said, it was worth every moment of it.
Kind of horrifying to think that someone would come all the way back here for a pack of smokes, though. But when you say it's long, is it infinite or does it end?
It does end. Yogananda's answer to that one was beautiful. He said, you go on until you achieve endlessness.
So if it's endlessness, then it doesn't end, does it?
It doesn't end, but it ends in endlessness, which is to say, you're beyond the suffering, beyond the pain, beyond the desires, into a state of perfect bliss. And the one beautiful thing that he said about bliss, because, you know, the teaching of Shankaracharya in India was, this was his answer to Buddhism. Buddha had said that there are no gods as such. Don't look to them. And so people who followed Buddha tended to become atheists. But that wasn't his meaning. And so God came again in the form of Shankaracharya. And Shankaracharya explained that God does exist, but he's not a man with eight arms or whatever the case might be. He is the state of Satchitananda, or ever-existing, ever-conscious. And here's what was interesting is, Yogananda added the word, ever-new bliss. And the incredible thing about that bliss is that it's always new. It's always, you can't explain how, but the novelty never ends.
And yet you're talking about like being unattached and having no desires. Like, don't you get to a point where nothing's bliss? When
you have no desires, it's because you don't need them. You're without desires because you've got everything you want.
But you're still finding bliss in where you are.
Yes. And that doesn't mean that you sit in the corner hugging yourself and giggling.
Although that has its merits too, I'm sure.
Not much. No, in this state, you just feel like tears coming into your eyes all the time. Everything is so wonderful. And this is the state of bliss, that you feel that there is a purpose in all life. Everything has its ending in that endless bliss.
Okay, the ending with the endlessness kind of makes my brain hurt, but we'll leave that point for a minute.
Well, I'm sorry for that. I have to say that's not my problem, Nicole.
It's not. No, clearly.
I feel liberated by that thought.
You mentioned about meditation and yoga as being part of this whole path that you're on. Why are they important, and can we expand on that?
Well, you know, most people's minds are so busy thinking of everything. They don't even listen to you. You try to talk to them, and they're thinking, now, let's see, what do I want for breakfast, and so on. And So meditation, I say it this way, that prayer is praying to God, talking to God. Meditation is listening for his answer. And that inner voice is there all the time. Meditation helps us to hear it.
Which
so what you're doing,
sense.
What's that?
It makes sense logically as well.
Yeah.
Is this
yeah.
something, how do you practice it though? Do you have a strict practice around it?
You know, there are techniques that help you to practice it. Those techniques help you to calm your mind. For instance, watching the breath or repeating a particular mantra that has a certain power in itself and makes the mind calm. Or as in Kriya Yoga, which is a technique Yogananda brought to the West, you bring your consciousness into the spine and you realize that your reactions to life, which are what make life seem real, are, in other words, you see a beautiful sunset and you enjoy it. But your enjoyment is internal. It's your reaction that makes it real for you. But that reaction is a movement of energy in the spine. That when you see something you like, these are techniques, and I'm not expecting our listeners to understand much of this, but I have to touch on it at least. That when I feel happy about something, suddenly I inhale, and the energy comes up the spine. You never find people who feel uplifted leaning over a table, looking at the floor, and feeling heavy. There's an upward movement in the spine. Yoga takes normal things that we all know, and it shows the deep esoteric reason behind them. Why do your eyes look upward? Why do you smile? Why do you sit up straight when you feel good? Because the energy is moving up your spine. Why do you feel badly? There's the corresponding movement while you feel badly of slumping forward, looking down, feeling heavy, frowning, all these things. So the beautiful thing about yoga is that it's tied in with the actual realities that we all know, but it takes them to a level you suddenly find yourself that you've opened a window onto infinity.
You know, myself and definitely I'm sure many people listening have gone through, Kundalini awakening or that, you know, that energy coming up your spine. And
yeah.
And without the proper guidance and leadership in that, you know, I've had great challenges in that. Are you finding that a lot more people are going through that?
I don't encounter much of that. If you have any kind of guidance at all, that's not a problem.
So do you find that more people are aware of what you're speaking and more...
You know, because I've been teaching now for over 60 years. And I've seen this real change in people, that there's much more interest in spirituality. It seems like we're at an age now where there are two directions. There have been a bifurcation where people are going more toward matter or more toward spirit. But I think that this is going to end up in a real blowout for the world with depression and warfare and so on. But in the end, people will come out and realize that we have entered a new age of energy. And this is all that tension really is involved in. And this age of energy will bring peace and harmony to this world such as we haven't known.
How long do you think this phase is going to go? Do you have any idea?
This thing you're talking of as being the problem?
The phase that we're going with the big change in the world.
I think it'll take maybe 15, 20 years. But, you know, warfare now can't be very long. You could destroy too much with atom bombs. Depression, I think that can last a while. It'll cause great suffering. I do think that we're going to end up with a world with far fewer people. But once it comes out of the other end of the tunnel, it'll be a peaceful world and a beautiful one. And I do think something else, that the answer to this depression, which I see coming, is to get together with other people and form communities in the country where you can grow your own food. That is more important than having gold. If you have food to eat, you can live. And I've founded 8 communities like that in the world, some in America, some in Italy, some in India. But these communities are places where people now for more than 40 years have been living together in harmony and support, and it's really a wonderful way to live. I think that will be the model of the future. We'll get away from the big cities and have smaller communities in the country. And I think the world will enable these things to happen, because I do think that many people will, of course, not be able to survive this big period that's coming. Bombs falling everywhere, that's not going to be pleasant. The beautiful thing to think about, Nicole, is the life goes on. The soul's consciousness goes on. And whether we're here or on another planet or in heaven or where, it doesn't matter. You will never die. You are as old as God.
Wow. As old as God.
Yes.
You know, I got to tell you,
because he manifested you. He is your reality.
I have to tell you, you know, we're talking today, again, just I do everything kind of just based on that intuitive voice you were talking about. So I'm always saying that News for the Soul is spirit-driven or run by God. So that's, you know, we have a 2-year waiting list. And when I got the email about the you doing your press releases and that you're out there speaking, I immediately booked you on the show because, as I said, really resonated with that, the energy of your teacher. And I'm wondering what it is that you're doing right now. Like, you're obviously speaking in a lot of places all of a sudden and really getting out there in the media. What is driving your wanting to connect in a big way right now?
Right now, I want people to understand what the spirit of my guru was, because everything branches out from that. I lived with him myself, and I found him so absolutely charming and human, but in a beautiful way, with a wonderful sense of humor. And he is being depicted too often by his followers as having been stern and judgmental and a strict disciplinarian. And I think some of the disciples, their egos are involved just to say, look, I was able to survive it. But they don't realize what damage they're doing to him. People don't want to feel they're coming to somebody who's going to judge them. That becomes another popular image of God. He was not like that. He was a wonderful, sweet, absolutely divine human being. But you know, one thing I've discovered is, the more you feel bliss in yourself, the more you do become very decisive. And he did speak very decisively. And some people who are immersed in ego consciousness, to them that means self-affirming, which he never was.
So, I mean, in the time that we have together today, what are the most important messages from your teacher that we can get out to our audience? What could we sort of summarize, you know, in the next 20 minutes, the most important points of his life's work and message?
There was a man who came to him and had lots of intellectual questions. And Yogananda, hearing the first one, said, love God. Well, this wasn't what the man asked at all. He sort of shrugged his shoulders and went on to the next question, love God. He thought, well, this doesn't make sense. So he went on to his third question. Yogananda said, love God, and got up and walked out of the room. That's the answer to everything. We don't need all these intellectual questions. If we love God, he will. I had the misfortune to come to God through the intellect. It would have been much easier if I had sought him through the heart, but that was my ignorance. But love of God is the answer to everything. And I did, at least through the intellect, come to that understanding. Love is everything. Bliss is everything. There are no questions really to be asked. You just have to know that you are a part of that infinite bliss and love. So what can I say about his message? To bring God into daily life. Try this experiment. People in our countries are interested in experimenting. Well then, why not try this experiment? Think of God every minute of the day for one day. Or just spend 1 minute, one hour talking to him mentally. Don't think he or she. Think you. What shall I do? You tell me where I should go. It's a beautiful practice. And pretty soon you'll begin to find that there is a certain sense of guidance there and a certain sense of bliss that will be welling up within you, and you will feel him in the room with you. This, we are talking about realities, not theories. Mm-hmm. And I can say that this is the answer to everything. Let him give them to you.
Wow. What's next for you in your work?
Well, I would like to, first of all, I feel myself guided by him. And so whatever he wants, I'm willing to accept and to do. But when I came across the country to meet him 62 years ago, the first thought in my mind was, this truth is so wonderful. I wish I could share it with the whole world. And here I am with that same desire. I know it's totally impractical. I know I'll never share it with the whole world. But that is my desire. And how do you put a step into that one? I'll take the next step that is offered to me to try to bring God closer to other people. And I have written a few movies. And I think that the next one will be the showing of a movie called The Wayshower, which is about the life of Yogananda. And I have great hopes for that movie, inspiring many people. There's another group of people there in Romania right now. That's where I was born. And looking at places to put into a film about my life and my search for truth and my coming to Yogananda. But I think perhaps movies will be the next thing in my personal life.
That's certainly a great way for reaching, the masses.
It is. You know, I wanted to be a playwright at one time. But movies are so much more immediate. You can see the expression in people's eyes, which you can't from a theater floor. On a stage. But in a movie, you can come right up and see closely. And with the accompanying music and everything, it can be a wonderful medium for inspiring with thoughts that can remain with you all your life.
Now, you've authored, I don't know if this is a typo or what, over 140 books and composed over 400 pieces of music.
It's kept me off the streets, you could say.
That's a lot of writing.
I tried to reach people in every possible walk of life I could. I wrote a book, a series of booklets, smaller books, about 24 of them, for seekers of happiness, seekers of success, etc. And somebody who was out on the road said, well, one need I'm encountering constantly is a book for secrets for women. And he said, well, you couldn't do that one, of course. And I said, well, of course not. Then I thought later, well, why not? So I asked God to help me, and suddenly I found myself with a very feminine consciousness. And I was able to understand the needs of women and for the time that it took me to write it, that feeling was very strong on me. When I came out of it, it took me quite a while to shake off the hypnosis that I was a woman. But anyway, I've always tried to tune into whatever it is I have to do.
You know, for people listening right now, and they haven't had that connective direct experience, and that, you know, often you hear these kinds of talks and think, oh, I want to feel that, you know. And is there some kind of process you can guide our listeners through to feel that direct personal connection with God right now?
You know, I said it already. Talk to him. It's all grace in the end. He does it, you don't do it. He's like the sunlight on the side of a building. And if the curtains of your room are closed, the sunlight can't come in. But if you open those curtains, then the sunlight itself does its pouring into the room. You don't do that. So don't worry about that side of it. Open yourself to God. Open yourself by trusting, by love, by willingness to let anything happen. Most people will say, oh, this mustn't happen. I mustn't have to go through that. Well, you may have to. It's a very good practice to say, even if I should be treated this way or that way, could I take it? It's very good to reach that point where you realize how you could take it. In the end, this is all a dream. When you wake up from it, you will see that it had its purpose. It taught you lessons, and you can go on free without them. It doesn't have to be a permanent reality. In fact, the interesting thing is that any personal problem that you have, and everybody has something, you just think you'll never come out of it. But once you do come out of that particular delusion or whatever it may be, suddenly you wonder, what was all the excitement about? It ceases to exist for you. This is why the story of the Bhagavad Gita, which is a great scripture of India, it's set on the battlefield. And Arjuna says, I don't want to kill these relatives of mine. And they were his relatives he was fighting. And it means these qualities of anger and so on, they're on my own relatives. This is the meaning of it. But I don't want to kill them. I don't want to get rid of my tendency to be angry or jealous or whatever. And once you've overcome it, you realize that the same energy that it took to be angry, you feel much happier when you're without it. So nothing dies. Everything just keeps going on in a higher and higher octave. It's an absolutely wonderful truth that no delusion to which you are now subject need be a concern in the end. It doesn't exist for you. Everything you are in your personality is not your true self. Your true self is not defined by your personality. It's defined by that underlying bliss with which you are going through all of life's turmoil to reach its own source.
If people want to get a hold of you or find out more about Yogananda's life's work,
they can write to Ananda L.A., A-N-A-N-D-A-L-A for Los Angeles, .org. Or they can write to, that'll do. And if they're living in Los Angeles, which I suppose some of your people do, they can come to my Sunday satsangs at 11 o'clock at, that same thing can tell you. But it's on Highland Avenue. What's the number? 425 Highland Avenue at 11 o'clock on Sunday mornings. And I'm going to be giving in Los Angeles at the Church of the Recessional in Forest Lawn. That's a big cemetery. I wrote an oratorio on the life of Christ, and it's really a very uplifting piece of music. I've written a lot of music in my life. And so we're going to be forming that oratorio there on the 4th of December at 7 p.m. So if they can come to that too. Another thing I would really suggest is that people obtain a copy of my book, The New Path, which is my life with Paramahansa Yogananda. It's received several awards in America, and I'm grateful for the fact. But to me, it tells about my own search. And then the most important part of the book tells the reader what it was like actually to live with Yogananda. It was a thrilling thing, and I'm so glad I've been able to share that experience with other people. I have the blessing of a very clear memory, and so I was able to make many, many incidents so fresh and alive that the reader can feel that he was there too.
All right. Well, that's all at anandala.org. Thank you so much for being here today. It's been a great pleasure.
It's been my pleasure too, Nicole. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All the best. Keep us in the loop and stay in touch. And good luck getting out to the your message out to the world.
Okay.
All right.
Well, God bless you.
Thank you. You too. And
bye-bye.
Take care. Thanks to all of you who tuned in, called in, hang on those lines and emailed and did all the things that you did. You can hear this all again, all free, all the time. Newsforthesoul.com. We've been talking to Swami Kriyananda. You can find out all about the stuff going on in L.A. and everything he talked about, including his book, at anandala.org. Thanks for tuning in.